An elite boarding school in Massachusetts has spent hundreds of thousands of dollars renovating its library. Cushing Academy wasn't just redoing the walls and carpets or modernizing the stacks. It was getting rid of the actual physical books. The school's library has gone digital. And that has some librarians and book lovers worried, as Tina Antolini reports from member station WFCR.
If you happened into the Cushing Academy library a year ago, you would have found the pretty typical hushed atmosphere and tall stacks of books. But that's not the case anymore.
Here I'm in the middle of the library, and this is what it sounds like.
I love it here.
There's a new cafe where the circulation desk used to be, where there once were bookshelves. Students now sit in easy chairs, studying or watching three new flat-screen TVs. It's all part of what really have been two substantial changes at Cushing's library. The first is getting rid of the stacks, most of them anyway. And the second is to transform this place into a hub of activity to give what's now a largely virtual library a physical home and gathering space. Sophomore Elsie Eastman says she's here all the time now.
I remember last year I barely went to the library. Like, I loved the library. I just never really went.
Dean of Academics Susie Carlisle says school officials had noticed that. She says surveys they conducted showed students weren't turning to printed materials for research. They were immediately going online.
And part of our desire to move in this direction is to meet the students where they are most comfortable. And it's our responsibility as well to help students understand the emerging technologies that they are going to be faced with.
Carlisle says the library is trading its 20,000-volume collection for a database of millions of digital books. All students can access those books, either through the 68 Amazon Kindles cycling around campus or on the laptop that each student is provided. Headmaster James Tracy says Cushing's change has already upped their circulation numbers, and he says it's giving students access to the content of books that matters, not the format.
If I look outside my window and I see a student reading Chaucer under a tree, it is utterly immaterial to me whether they are doing so by way of a Kindle or by way of a paperback.
The library's scrapping of printed books brought a surge of online indignation when it was announced last summer. Tracy says that's no surprise. He shares a love of books and what he calls a nostalgic attachment to flipping the pages. But some bibliophiles say it's not just nostalgia. Camilla Alire is president of the American Library Association. While she's all for libraries riding the wave of technological changes, she says the issue here is how far Cushing went.
In terms of making that particular school library an either or. Students learn differently, and some students will take to digital resources and information technology like a duck takes to water. And then there are other students who learn by turning the pages, by handling the materials.
Plus, Alire says most schools couldn't afford Cushing's move. Tom Corbett, the executive director of Cushing's Library, doesn't dispute that, though he says the price is coming down every day. In fact, he says resources are why Cushing decided to go whole hog for digital.
In order for librarians to really do a good job, an exceptional job of focusing on online resources, they really need to move away from some of the other priorities they've had in the past. And managing a large print collection is a lot of work.
But how the library manages its new digital collection is still largely a work in progress, as is how the students receive it. Five lit students clustered around a library table with their digital readers before them were a little ambivalent. They like their Kindles, but they don't love them. They say annotating is slow and annoying. And sophomores Cameron Akers and Thomas Pacheco are not totally convinced this change is the way the school should be going.
Without the books, kind of lose the feel of the library. It's a great study place, but I don't feel like I can read here anymore.
And also, like, it's not really quiet anymore like a usual library is anyway.
Yeah, a lot more distractions.
Whether their school is the vanguard of the 21st century or not, some Cushing Academy students are still eager for the shush of a librarian and the immersion in a good old-fashioned book. For NPR News, I'm Tina Antolini in Western Massachusetts.
This is NPR, National Public Radio.
And our last word in business today is about a job opening in Santa Cruz, California.
Big boss, man.
The word is deadhead wanted. The University of California, Santa Cruz needs someone to manage its Grateful Dead archive. The school has a trove of recordings, documents, clippings, art, and material related to the band's famous network of fans, known as Deadheads. Candidates will need, quote, expert knowledge of contemporary popular music and a master's degree in archive management. And that's the Business News on Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Renee Montaigne.
And I'm Steve Inskeep.
As a group, women have been outperforming men in college for years. Now, the U.S. Commission on Civil Rights wants to know if colleges have begun admitting less qualified men instead of more qualified women because those colleges fear their campuses might become overwhelmingly female. NPR's Claudio Sanchez reports.
Since 1970, the college attendance rate among women has skyrocketed. Today, on most college campuses, women are the majority. And they're not just growing in numbers. They now earn about 60% of all bachelor's degrees. Gail Harriet, a law professor at the University of San Diego, didn't think this was a problem until, she says, she recently noticed something else.
We had heard about, and I had seen articles that suggested that some colleges and universities are discriminating in favor of men and against women in their admissions processes.
Harriet, a member of the U.S. Commission on Civil Rights, says colleges, especially small, selective, liberal arts colleges, are so worried about becoming overwhelmingly female that some may be rejecting highly qualified women to make room for less qualified men. And that, Harriet says, would be a violation of Title IX, the 1972 law that prohibits gender discrimination in any school or program that accepts federal aid. So what Harriet and other members of the Civil Rights Commission plan to do is subpoena the admissions records and policies of at least 12 public and private colleges.
We don't know whether we're going to find discrimination at all, but we're going to be looking, and we hope that, if nothing else, this study will allow us to nail down the facts.
But some say the commission's investigation into gender discrimination is baseless.
Is there evidence of this? Who has it? Where is it?
Jennifer Delahunty is Dean of Admissions and Financial Aid at Kenyon College, a small private school in Ohio.
I don't see anybody who has a policy that says, you know, that we're going to choose less qualified boys over more qualified girls. No admissions office would make those kinds of decisions. So I wonder if they're not barking up the wrong tree with this investigation.
Ironically, it was Delahunty's 2006 op-ed piece in the New York Times about highly qualified women, including her daughter, being rejected by top schools that started a firestorm over gender discrimination in college admissions. Today, Delahunty argues that colleges should be concerned about the drop in male enrollment. Since the mid-1990s, researchers say that drop has been precipitous. Today, the share of 25 to 29-year-old males with a bachelor's degree is much lower compared to females in the same age group. And academically, women continue to outperform men, says Tom Mortensen, an analyst with the Pell Institute for the Study of Opportunity in Higher Education.
They graduate from high school at higher rates than men do. They go on to college at higher rates. They complete college at higher rates. And I see nothing right now that's going to turn that around.
With fewer college-eligible males in the pipeline, Mortensen argues, the gender imbalance on campuses is inevitable.
And the people who work on these campuses say that boys, frankly, are not at their best, where they are outnumbered 2-to-1 by girls. It's probably not a healthy situation for either gender.
That may be true, says Commissioner Gail Harriet, but this is not about a gender imbalance on campuses. It's about the civil rights of women and whether they've been violated in the college admissions process. The commission's findings will be made public within a year. Claudia Sanchez, NPR News.
Today is one of the most stressful days of the year in South Korea. Nearly 700,000 high school students are taking the National College Entrance Exam. The test is given only once a year, and it largely determines a young person's future. It's so important that aircraft are barred from flying near the test site, and the workday begins an hour late to prevent traffic jams that might make students late. From Seoul, Dwali Saikauto has this report.
That's the sound of a police officer on a motorbike escorting a tardy student to Posung Girls High School, one of more than 1,100 exam locations throughout the country. It's not an unusual sight for this important day. On this cold and windy morning, a mother shouts words of encouragement to her daughter. Other parents are standing outside a gate holding coffee cups and watching as students run to their test. Some carry seat cushions. Others have bottles of water stuffed inside plastic bags. Many are clearly anxious to get this day over with. 18-year-old Kim Ka-hee says she's been studying 5 to 6 hours a day outside of school in preparation for this test.
I'm really nervous now, but I think it will feel good when it's over and these nerves are gone.
Kim wants to get into Hongik University, a school known for its fine art programs.
Now I'm feeling this is the most important test in my life, and from university to everything else, it's all going to be changed by this.
The pressure of the test can have tragic consequences. Every year there are reports of suicides connected to students taking the exam. One of those occurred this morning when police said a 19-year-old jumped to his death only hours before the start of the rigorous exam. At Jogyesa, the largest Buddhist temple in Seoul, monk Pon Kong performs a ceremony where mothers and fathers pray for high scores on their children's college placement exams. Some have been praying for the last 100 days. As parents and grandparents chant, they kneel and bow facing three Buddhist statues. Many concentrate on a thin prayer book with a photo of their child or children. Some have prayer beads called yomju, circling the pictures. Kim Chi-suk says this exam day is hard on her 18-year-old daughter Park Min-sun.
It's so hard that my kid doesn't want to raise a kid in this country. But nothing can be done about it. That's just the way things are.
Kim says she just wants her child to succeed in life. She says she's grateful the South Korean government has many measures in place to help students do better on the exams.
I'm thankful. Children here, unlike in other countries, don't get various opportunities to decide their academic future. Only one test, only one day.
Kim Po-yeop is with the Ministry of Education.
Our country's passion for education is the highest in the world. 83% of our high school graduates go on to university. That's how great the demand for higher education is and the desire to get a great education for their kids on the part of our parents.
The state test took roughly 9 hours and will determine college admissions by next spring. For NPR News, I'm Dua Lee, Sai Kow Tao in Seoul.